You're listening to The Kylo Show, the podcast where we talk about how to keep your love on no matter what and why whole healthy families are going to save the world. And it starts right now.
Welcome, everyone, to The Kylo Show. Here we are. I know this is usually Brittany's spot right here, but today it's the guys. The guys are taking over. We are following up. The ladies had a good time together, wild and crazy. But today we got Ben Zirpel.
Hello.
Good to be back. And Christian Zamora.
Hey there.
That we all kind of hang out together here at the Loving on Purpose campus.
That we do.
Headquarters.
The headquarters. And today we're going to take a stab at answering the question, why do we need men around anyway? Mm. What's the deal?
I hope we need them.
Yeah. Well, it's...
We definitely do.
It seems to be a full-on war trying to convince a generation of boys and young men that, you know what? There's not much use for you, actually. And one of the ways that we know that is the number of books trying to affirm men and remind men and encourage men. Yeah. I think of we got a book coming out here pretty soon. You know, Dragon Slayers is just around the corner. But if you've not read The Men We Need by Brant Hansen, that's a really great book. I would really recommend that. And pretty much anything by Stephen Mansfield.
Yeah.
You know, Men on Fire and Band of Brothers and Mansfield's
Book of Manly Men.
Manly Men.
It's a great title.
It's kind of, you know, all that stuff. But these books that are coming out are really trying to counter the message that men are toxic, men are overpowering, men are abusers. There's women that are abusers too. There's toxic marshmallows out there. You know, don't eat them. You know, stay away from them. But you put the word toxic in front of anything, and it really, it taints everything in the conversation after that. So I think there are men who aren't doing their job.
Yeah.
And that has a toxic effect. There are women who aren't doing their job, and that lends a toxic effect. There's leaders that aren't doing their job, and that saturates the environment with a toxic element. You know, the Bible says that when the wicked rule, the people groan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But when the righteous rule, the people rejoice. You know, so there is an effect on any environment that is very much, are you doing your job? Yeah. Are you doing a good job with the role that you have?
Yeah, and to do that, you have to know your job.
Yeah.
I mean, and this is actually not uncommon, but I think most men are struggling with this because they don't know what their job is because they haven't been trained in it.
Yeah.
I mean, you see this in the workplace. I use a lot of sports references, but, coaches are famous for saying, do your job.
Do your job.
Like, hey, the team gets together, the linemen are blocking, the receivers are running their routes, quarterback, if everyone's doing their job, this play is going to get executed, and we do that a number of times. We do it better and more often, the other team are going to win.
Yeah.
But for them to do their job, they have to know it. Like even here at Loving on Purpose, one of the things we have to do is actually sit down with people and go, let's detail out your job.
Yeah.
Here's what's expected. This is what you're expecting to do, and I'm going to keep you accountable to this.
Yeah.
And once there's a clarity around the job, people flourish because it's like, I didn't know that was
this
my
is
job.
Winning.
This is winning. I like to do well.
This is what it looks like.
And so, you know, there is it feels like a saturation, and it's good, but it's also could be a little overwhelming of lots of books and lots of voices about this is what it is, you know, and you have some varying opinions even. Mm-hmm. But you mentioned that I just finished that book, The Men We Need.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
And why that book, I told my wife, I was like, this might have moved in my top 10 favorite books. It was one of those ones I kept looking forward to the moment I get to read it again.
Yeah.
And the reason was it's so practical. He's a great writer. Yeah. But it's
the avid endorsement.
Yeah, yeah. The avid endorsement. The president of the library club in high school. And he owns that. He's like, I'm going to teach you how to be a man. And it's such a great...
Yeah. Pivot,
because, you know, some of the stuff out there about manhood, you know, is like...
Be Joe Rogan, go
get jiu-jitsu and you know, all this other stuff, which is, that's great. I mean, there's some to that. That's awesome. But this, here's a guy who feels like the antithesis of that, but he's saying, this is how I show up as a man. And you're reading and you go, this guy's the freaking man. This dude is awesome.
Yeah.
And the whole book just outlines, this is what it looks like. This is what a man looks like. This is what a man does.
Yeah.
And he does an incredible job. So doing our job, the men we need, need to know what that job is. And I think we're going to talk a little bit about that today. Yeah,
totally.
Yeah. Yeah. Just that. I mean, I listened to that book actually a while ago when Danny first mentioned it, and it's fun to listen to because he's funny. He's just a funny guy, yeah, which helps as well. It just helps the, reading the book, but it just rounds the conversation too, like you're talking about, is it defines the job for men who are sitting there, which I have these conversations all the time, men going, I don't want to go out and hunt something. I don't want to go out and get punched in the face every 10 minutes and by choice, you know. But it rounds the conversation to, you know, as he's talking about how he shows up for his kids and his wife and his job, and it just, it invites men into what it really means to be a healthy man.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it doesn't mean you have to be the avid outdoorsman. Mm-hmm. He's the avid indoorsman, as he describes himself. But it's so encouraging to have both sides of that coin. That doesn't matter where you fall. The things that are most important, are you paying attention to those?
Yeah, and we know that men are in crisis because the more conversations you have with young men, in particular, the more you hear the verbiage of, I don't think I'm going to get married.
Yeah,
I'm afraid to get married. I got a good gig, you know, going on right now. I can't really think of why I would give this up. And so the big product of leading and creating a family is being dissolved just in men being talked out of their role and into something that is fruitless. You know, a selfish, consuming life does not produce. You're going to get to the end of that life and you're going to go, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
What have I done?
Yeah, because that's, you know, like you said, it's the target they've been given of go get financially secure, go get everything worked out perfectly before you get married and or have kids.
Pursue your dreams.
This is the time to do it now. You're young. You have time.
Yeah.
You're not going to be able to do that. And it goes back to culture and even people in the church. I'm like, you're not going to have time. We're perpetuating the culture leaked into the church a little bit of like, this is going to be really hard once you have a family. So enjoy it now. Do it now. And the opposite should be true as far as the target, you know, which is, hey, go find yourself a wife. This is going to be a great, like, being married is awesome. Yeah. I mean, I had a buddy, really great friend of mine, who was struggling, and he came up to me, and he was talking about his marriage, and he reached out to me. He's like, the reason I'm talking to you is before I got married, you were the only guy who told me that it was going to be great.
Hmm.
I told every single one of my buddies, and they go, oh, you're getting a ball and chain. Oh, you know, kiss this goodbye. Oh, here goes your this. And he goes, and you told me it was going to be the best thing that ever happened to me. And he's like, I've held on to that. And like, yeah, it's tough right now, but my marriage has been awesome. Mm-hmm. And I want to keep working through it. It's like, all right, dude, here you go. Fight of your life. Let's come on. Like, but that's it's such the opposite these people are hearing, which of course is why we have, I think there was reading somewhere, it was more 30-year-olds than ever who want to be married, 30-year-old women, 30-year-old women plus, who want to be married and want kids, but don't. So not by choice.
Mm-hmm.
They just aren't able to connect because they're basically looking for guys to do that and they don't want to participate.
Yeah. And, you know, the Bible says, Proverbs 18 says, a man who isolates himself, seeks his own desire, and rages against wise counsel and judgment.
Mm-hmm.
And so what happens is when I don't have any real purpose in my life, meaning that reproducing in a family, loving deeply and well, when you replace that kind of purpose with you know, job promotions and or work, you in essence insulate and isolate yourself against your purpose, and pretty soon all you think about is yourself. You wake up in the morning and you are, how will I fulfill myself today? And I'm in charge of as much of my time and energy as I possibly can be. And then you get gobbled up in porn. You get gobbled up in substance abuses. You know, you get gobbled up in the it's kind of a fruit of meaninglessness, I think, is that you're just trying to distract yourself. You're just trying to create something that stimulates you because work isn't going to do it.
I think one of the things that I think about in this conversation often too is covenant.
Yeah.
You know, I have a group of men that I meet with monthly, and we're close friends. I've known some of these guys for 20 years, and we got in a conversation recently just actually about each other, about this group and the covenant we're building with each other. I told these men, I said, I'm going to commit my life to you for the rest of my life, meaning I'd like to be connected to you. And that was an interesting conversation with a bunch of men, because they're like, wait, the rest of my life?
Oh, are you coming on to me?
That's that didn't happen, which is good.
What kind of group is this?
It could sound that way. But there's this covenant relationship, even just among men. And so even more with a woman, you know, it's just an even deeper invitation that feels like it scares so many men. Yeah. Like the idea of committing my life to someone for that long is just freaking me out.
Yeah, and especially if you're an unmarried guy with no children and someone says that to you. Yeah. Like, I have no grid for what you just said.
Yeah.
But the married guys who, you know, have a batch of kids, they're like, I'm on.
Yep.
You know, I can do this. I know I can do this. I've been doing this.
Yeah. Totally. Going back to like creating purpose, and I often talk about with kids, you know, every time one of my buddies, you know, we had kids a little earlier than most of my friends. Every time they started having kids, one of the things that I told them, my favorite thing to tell them is, hey, dude, you're about to find another gear you did not know you had.
Yeah.
And you're going to drop down in that gear and you're going to hit this. It's going to be amazing. You know, this thing that comes out of you. All of them follow up and go, hey, I found that gear, man. That was right. It's amazing, because nothing motivates you like you're the way God designed you to be, you know.
A provider.
A provider. Yeah. Provider, protector, connector. Come on.
All that. You know, those commitments and those responsibilities are what push that deeper into your masculinity, and that's where you find it. Nothing else pushes it down in there. You're like, what would I give my life for?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Who would I give my life for? It's not even an idea you entertain until you become a protector, a provider, a connector at that level of a lifetime covenant. You're like, I would give my life for her. I would give my life for these kids. You know, I'm going to. Now my job has a real purpose. It's not just to tickle my ego. It's really to serve what my life is really built around, and that's this family.
Yeah, because taking on lots of responsibility doesn't often feel like this is going to be great for me. It feels like work. But when you but when you get that thing switched in your brain where you realize, no, you know, like most things in the kingdom, you know, I would quote Banning Leap Show, or at least where I heard it, Banning, you know, it's like we live the kingdom, it's upside down kingdom, it's countercultural. So it's like the last shall be first, the first shall be last. So like here's another thing around that too of, hey, when you take on a lot of responsibility, you're going to be so blessed of it because of it. Your life's going to be so much better when you start acquiring responsibility for other people. And I found it to be true, and I think a lot of people have.
Yeah, it's absolutely true that the greatest parts of who you are really discovered in what you have to give to these people, your wife and your kids. Yeah. I mean, it's you didn't even know it was there. You didn't even know it was possible. You didn't know that you could be this sacrificial, that you could be this honoring, that you could be this careful, that you could be this, you could make this many adjustments that were going to long-term improve who you are. You would never find that, you know? And that is the piece, I think, is the distraction around, you know, go pursue yourself, you know, your self-awareness, your passion, your go out and discover this as a primary goal. And it's a trick.
Yeah.
It's a trick because it leaves you in this superficial experience of life. And it's not until you find people that you say, I would give my life for you, that your life even really starts to mature.
Because I think what happens right there is just this conversation about legacy. Mm-hmm. Is legacy starts coming to life. Like, oh man, I am living my life for fruit that will bear. I'm gonna bear fruit through my life that I may never see. That's for my children and my children's children. Mm-hmm. And it's just a wild conversation to think about. But you know, Bill Johnson is probably the best at teaching us about thinking from eternity. You know, which is just a hard thing to do when I'm living my life for myself. So I think this conversation for men is grabbing a hold of that legacy mm-hmm. opportunity is such a big deal. Mm-hmm. It changes things on the inside.
Yeah, and a righteous man lays up an inheritance for his children's children. You know, so I think like that. I think, oh my gosh, you know, I am really. At this point in my life, I am living to benefit Lainey, Addie, and Lincoln. You know, so much of the momentum of my life at this point, all my children are adults and they're figuring their lives out. But these children, they really need a foundation to start on, to build on. So anything I can do to generate that kind of momentum for their success feels like, that's the latter part of my life, really, is so many of people my age look at the generation that they're handing to their grandkids and just go, oh my gosh, what have we done? You know, look at this, look at that, look at these things. But I can still aim my strength mm-hmm. at the success of my grandchildren. And I think, you know, when you're talking about masculinity, it literally is a seed sown in the soil. Yeah. And unless a seed falls to the ground and dies, it remains alone. And that's the trick, to get the seed to isolate itself so that it doesn't die. It tries to keep alive its whole life.
Save yourself.
And self-preservation is really what leads to toxic masculinity.
Yeah.
It's no good. And, you know, one of the things, bringing back to giving people a target and describing the job and laying out the job mm-hmm. of men, this is what you should be doing. If men that are listening, I hope you caught that, because mm-hmm. I didn't know that until I worked here, and I'm going to live on Danny here a little bit, and got around Danny when he said something like, I live so I can give, or he's talking about, I'm pointing my strength at my grandkids, you know, and so I have three boys at home, three future, you know,
world changers.
Oh, come on. Don't get me started. Come on. But that's how I look at him now mm-hmm. is like, this is my most important work.
Yeah.
Me and Bree, my wife, like this is the job I think about the most.
Yeah.
Is how do I do such a great job with these boys, preparing them for biblical manhood. And so much so, this is what I've been thinking about lately. It might be a weird analogy because in our sports now, like, I always talk about like hitting through things, like in football, you tackle through a defender or an offensive player. In baseball, you hit through the ball. You know, so I'm thinking about how do I get this? How do I hit through them with this stuff that I'm trying to impart to them mm-hmm. so that it's so deep on the inside of them that it becomes just the natural outflow of their character and their life with my grandkids mm-hmm. and their grandkids. Because it, you know, going back to there being lots of information around about masculinity in men, like I think there's a lot of guys out there who would agree and they see it and they go, oh my gosh. And it is kind of scary, the landscape. And if you want a more hopeful future, the best answer that I've got recently is focus on your local relationships, like do a good job with your family. So it's like, okay, I don't know how to go affect change in the entire world right now, but you know what I could do? I could do a really good job with Josiah, Jonah, and Justice. I could do a really good job with them. So much so that when they have kids and you start seeing how that tree multiplies down the line, if we do a good job, you know, creating legacy like Ben was talking about. And so I had to readjust my target though. And it, and that's why I think we're talking about of, hey man, if you're paying attention, this is how you do it. Cause yeah. until I got around a guy who was living that way, who I looked up to, and he said, hey, this is how you do it. Some of it was a little bit of a lesson. Other of it was, I just watched him. Mm-hmm. I'm watching him going, okay, he's doing this. I'm going to go try this too. Oh, this is working really good. My life's a little bit better when I do it this way. I'm going to keep doing this. I'm going to keep doing it this way, which is, you know, your band of brothers. You need to be around other guys who are chasing after the same things.
Yeah. And I think your boys are the greatest investment that you'll ever make in your life. You know, it's kind of like investing in a company or something when it's small and you're just, you know, you're just trying to figure out how to grow this thing and what can you do. And there's no guarantees, you know, you're not like, okay, my kid's going to graduate from Harvard and whatever I thought, you know, whatever I thought the epic touchdown was, but you will never make a deeper investment into yeah. somebody else's success than you do your own children.
If you're ready for a life-changing transformation, head on over to KyloUniversity.com now and start your journey towards a more fulfilling future. Don't miss this incredible opportunity. Your transformation begins at Kylo University. Visit KyloUniversity.com today.
I think kind of putting together two different things you said today, Christian, as well as you talked about your friend that came and found you years ago and said, you know, you're the only person that seemed excited about marriage. Mm. So talk to me about marriage for a minute. Mm-hmm. Help me understand this. And I'm sure you have people come find you as well since having children to say, you seem like you like your kids. Help me understand that. But I think there's something like that's what needs to catch fire. And that's what is catching fire. Like that's not what the news talks about. But when other men see men being successful in those things, the most important things, I think they start latching on to, hey, what are you doing? What's mm-hmm. working for you? Help me understand that. And that's, I think that's how we create change, yeah. is just doing a good job with what's in front of us, doing that job like you said, and then other men start coming alongside us going, okay, teach me, help me understand that. Yeah. And then all of a sudden, here we go. There's a tidal wave of healthy, whole men.
Totally. And it takes practice and mistakes and finding boundaries. I, you know, going back to the kids scenario, I had one three years ago where a guy I coached with came up to me and said, hey, how do you be so kind to your son when he's not performing well? Like, I see it not affect you when your son's not doing well on the field. How do you do that? Because it is so hard for me. And I start to get aggressive or mean and yell. And I don't want to. I know how it's affecting.
I don't want to be that guy.
I don't want to be that guy. Yeah. So it's like, aha, brother. Well, I'm doing great now because I used to not do great. Mm-hmm. I used to let it affect the heck out of me. Mm. And I started realizing how it was damaging my son. Mm. And I actually had to do my own heart work of like, why am I so upset with how you're doing? It's like, oh, I'm something in me, in my own heart is not right. So yeah. Let me go work that out. But it was a great, like you said, I learned this here at Loving on Purpose is like, you know, I was thinking, you know, I'm going to go minister to people or I'm going to help them. I'm going to teach them something. And what I'm finding, and what I think others find too, is your greatest ministry is just your life.
Yeah.
You know, when it's part of your character, I don't have to teach anybody anything. It's, this is who I am, and it's attractive. And they go, wait, how are you doing that thing that you're doing? I'd like to do that too. And it's exciting, and it you know, takes work, but it's good. It's good work.
Yeah, I think this is another piece of being a healthy man is that you dig deep in the courage that it takes to face your insecurities.
Yeah,
because you know this is what marriage does right off the bat is you know it triggers about 50 places in you and you're like, how could another human being be wrong about so much, you know? And how long is it going to take me to really sort her out? And she's thinking exactly the same thing, right? So it's a giant. It's a giant ball of adjustment where you're controlling what you don't control, which is the other person.
Yeah.
And so much of the success of becoming a healthy man is going to work on your heart, your spirit, and your physical health. You know, like, okay, you when you're doing that towards the purpose of deeper connection and success in a marriage, then it is constant. It's a constant daily reminder. When you're doing that to benefit these children you're investing in so deeply, it's a constant, continual reminder. When you remove that family element, you're now left with the idea that my greatest achievement is myself. My physique, mm-hmm. my bank account, my associates, that trophy over there, whatever. Like, I'm like, oh, geez, you know, this is just making me increasingly narcissistic in the grandiosity of me doing a great job with me. But when you are living in that cauldron of family, you are body, soul, and spirit. You are working your head off. You don't even know the work that's being done, but the deepest work is happening because of them, mm-hmm. to improve the quality of our experience together. I'm contributing this.
Yep.
And that is the deep work of a masculine heart, is to understand that you're a part of something much greater than yourself,
yep.
or you are the center of the universe.
Yeah.
I'm going to try and quote a verse that I might get wrong here, but it's something like, greater love has no one than this than the man who lays down his life for his friend.
Yeah.
Something like that, right?
Yep.
I forget where it's at right now.
I think it's in John.
I was going to say John, but yeah. I'm not sure where.
Yep.
Go look it up for me, someone, and tell me. But it's just a great reminder right there, you know, that there's just, that there really is no greater love. And this is what Jesus, the greatest man we've ever seen, put on display. It's just the sacrifice required to love someone at that level. There's nothing greater.
Mm-hmm.
There's just nothing that creates the life we want to live in more than that opportunity.
Mm-hmm. What are some of the disciplines that you've brought into your life to shape you, to hold yourself accountable, you know, not only to God, but also to being emotionally available, being a provider, a protector, a connector?
I think I've shared this before, but it's a super practical one, and it's helped me a ton in remembering my job, is writing down what's most important for me to do each day. And so, like, I'm a big planner and scheduler. So I plan my week out, I plan my days out, you know, it's all planned. And, but before I do that, I've written some non-negotiable things that are always happening, you know? So, you know, I have a mission statement around these things. And the first one is, I read it in order. The first one is, like, my relationship with God. 'Cause I've learned, like, when I do my relationship with God really well, everyone benefits. Yeah. It's he's the headwaters. Like, when I'm in alignment, my life's better and the life of everyone around me better. If I don't get that one right, everything else is shot anyways. Mm-hmm. So, well, let me focus on that. Right. Mm-hmm. We're talking also about our circles of intimacy. It's like, okay, God's in the middle. Mm-hmm. He's in the God spot. Let's make sure I do a good job with that one, because you can forget in the busyness of everything.
You put somebody else in there.
Yeah, that's not good.
And
And so I read through that, and growing in intimacy is, you know, the main goal. And here's my things that I focus on, like when I worship in, when I spend time in the Word, when I surround myself and challenge myself with books and podcasts and sermons. You know, these are the things I've found that really help me grow in that. And when I do a good job there, boom. So it's like, okay, reread the job description, read it every day. This is your first and most important task today. You know, second one, right after that, Brie, my wife, has her own page. But and it says something like, I will lay down my life daily for this woman. Mm. That's the level. Mm. I'll lay, just like Christ loved the church, I'm going to give my life up for her. So there's the standard.
Doing your job.
Doing my job. Here's the yep. job. The job, you know, mm-hmm. here's the, here, when I'm most successful, I found through, you know, we 11 years this year of marriage, but like in my 11 years, and these things might change, but what's most successful for me, for us, when we do well is like, okay, when I spend time with you, doing fun things or hard things, it doesn't matter. If I'm just around you, planning, dreaming, like when we do things together, it's better. When I know about you, like I put my, one of my targets is be a Brie expert. Like I will spend my lifetime trying to learn more and more about how she works. And I've maybe gotten a fraction of the way there, but you know, but so these are these things. And that, you know, another one is my boys. It's preparing my sons for biblical manhood by being intentional in my time and words with them daily. And my first target there is I'm going to do a good job with me because more is caught than taught and they're watching dad. So like, here's me doing a good job. The second is, I'm just going to spend a bunch of time having fun with them, making memories. The third one is I'll do some intentional discipleship with them. But so going back to a practical thing of I spent hours, you know, preparing those things and making sure they're exactly right and getting them really small. And then I just read them every day. Mm. And there's something about that daily practice and ritual for me that reminds me of here's your priorities. You do these things first always. Mm. And if I had a bad day at work, didn't get a bunch of stuff done, if I didn't do this or that, I look back and said, did I do my top three jobs really well? Yep, 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 yep. Great day.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Yeah, when you first asked that question, I'm thinking about Brittany and I, because you know, that's what creates the culture at home. You know, so all these things we're talking about, and there's a clear culture in my home, and that's either on purpose or on accident, to quote Brittany Serple. But it's the... I think us practicing just throughout the years going by of what it means to have a intimate loving connection between us, mm-hmm. and so we've gotten to the place to when that thing starts to dissipate or change or get stressed, we can feel it, mm-hmm. and so that thing staying sharp, staying tight, staying like you know we can feel it. Mm-hmm. She can look at me in the morning now and say, "How you doing?" I'll say, "I'm good," and she'll look at me a little bit deeper and say, "You're lying to me." Mm. Okay, maybe. Maybe I'm not great, but I'm working it out on the inside. But just the connection we have has just given room for us to know each other mm-hmm. at this level of trust. It's just so helpful. So that's the thing for us, I think, that starts, mm. you know, the God piece you're talking about, that's obviously first. But this is what holds the rest of the stuff we're talking about in the home with the kids and the family and everything else together is that we are prioritizing mm-hmm. our connection. And we're just coming off our 20th anniversary
come on
vacation too. So it's a little clear and recent, but yeah, that's so a big one.
Teamwork makes the dream work.
Teamwork makes the dream
work. There we
go. Yeah.
Awesome. I think Zach Curry says that all the time. Mm-hmm. You know, I think the idea of toxic masculinity really is, it sounds like, you know, it's the aggressive man that is, you know, dominating his house and angry and scary and all that stuff. And I'm sure that, you know, that is no fun. You know, that's definitely the definition of toxic. It's not masculine, though. You know, it's just an idiot. Mm-hmm. It's just a out of control child trapped in a man's body, you know, behaving all your emotions, never learning how to steward your own heart or your own mouth. And so, you know, but to tie that to masculinity, I think is the confusing piece. It's like, oh, anybody that's angry and abusive and controlling and that sort of thing is masculine. Like, no, that's not true. No. It's very much a childish, immature character defect.
Yeah.
That and it comes in all packages. Women, men, you know, teenagers,
yeah.
world rulers, and guys that, you know, or people that are trapped in an addiction somewhere. I think probably the place where the breakdown of masculinity is not getting sufficient attention is really in this passive man.
Yep.
I think when a man is not a protector and he is not a provider and he is not a connector, I think that is less obvious and far more frequent in a family, in a home, in a marriage, in society, where men have just absolved themselves of all these responsibilities and are essentially just along for the ride.
Yeah, it's a false start. They just never get going. They never got the charge. They maybe say someone gave them the job description, but probably not. They're just not doing anything. I think in that book, The Men We Need, I think he does a beautiful job kind of portraying that, where he talks about, you know, this real or fictional, I'm not sure, but you know, this, he's like, hey, here's a young guy. He's in his early 20s or mid 20s. Let's call him Steven. Steven's at home. He's plays video games. He's addicted to porn. He's not really harming anybody. You know, he's still taking some classes online. He's, you know, no harm, no foul. No one's being bothered. He's just kind of living his life. But then he makes the argument. It's like, oh, he's harming lots of people. And not only himself. He's like, well, maybe if he was living out his life the way he's supposed to as a man, maybe he was supposed to go to school, and maybe he's a, you know, a heart surgeon. Maybe he saves babies. Maybe there's his wife out there who never got met and swept off her feet, and the kids that he never had. And so he's does a great job portraying this, you know, this idea around these passive, it's even hard calling them men, but these passive adult boys that are sitting around thinking that they're not really harming anybody, which is, it feels somewhat, you know, newer or different, you know, where you actually have these people still living at home. I think even in the past, there was a different cultural norm where at least they got initiated in some ways, and the very, we'll call the very minimum of protection and provision, which is like, hey, I got a job, I'm writing the check. And hey, like if someone tried to attack you, I'd do something. Like I'd punch them, or maybe, you know. And so it's like that's the baseline. And there's something to be said about even just guys who do that. It's like you start a family, you write a, you know, we talk about fatherlessness in previous episodes, and you start learning that just even having a man in the home, if he did nothing, if she was around, the likelihood of the children's success goes way up. But going back to that, not being the standard, shouldn't be the standard of, okay, well, what does protection, connection, and provision look like at a biblical standard, the way that we're talking about it? And it raises the bar, and it calls to life not only the man to fully step into what it means to be a man, but it causes everyone around him to flourish. And yeah, I'm sorry. I'm still just juiced up about that book. It was a great book.
It's a great book. Yeah,
I think the other piece with this passivity conversation too is it feels like it's actually passed down, meaning that men are not being taught how to confront fear. And I've talked to so many men that when they look at their dads, they're like, he didn't teach me how to confront fear, so I'm not sure I know how to. So I'm just stuck giving in to the fear that's in front of me, which creates this passive experience for everyone else around you. So I think that's part of the conversation too, is men putting on courage to confront the fear that's in front of them today that's actually stopping them doing what we're talking about, stopping them from engaging their job. Because disengagement feels like a safer option than getting in the fight.
And I think you're making a case for surrounding yourself with other men. You know, because
totally,
there is a really high probability that you, even the men listening to this, didn't get great man lessons, you know, if any. Yeah, you know, like I grew up without a dad. So my toolbox is, with the exception of maybe a 3-year stint when I was 12 to 15, which is pretty important years for a young man. I had a stepfather step in there, and you know, he dropped a bunch of tools in the box that I'd never seen, and you know, and I fought him at every turn. Here's how you work your butt off. Get out there and cut some firewood, and don't come in until you got this much done. And don't forget to feed the animals every morning, every night. And you know, we're gonna go do this job, and we're gonna, you know, and you're gonna have to get up early, and I'm taking you hunting, and you know, you're gonna get up in the dark, and you're gonna be confused about, can, is this gun going to kill somebody? You know, what are you doing? Got to face it. So those years of my life, I learned a bunch of that stuff that I think later really propelled me into trying in a way I never would have. You know, I wouldn't have even tried if I had not learned as a 13-year-old boy that I could cut cords of wood, you know, and I could get up at 3 a.m. and drive for 2.5 hours to get to a muddy lake in January and crawl around in the freezing cold to hunt something that I thought was disgusting. You know, ducks are terrible. I mean, have you ever eaten that duck? It was just so bad. But that was part of my man lessons, really, was to get drawn into another man's life and to watch him.
Yeah, that's so good.
It's awesome.
It's I was just reliving my own little bit of stories there too, going back like some of those hard work and some, like, I remember I did carpets one summer with just one with my uncle, and it was, I mean, in it's, they just kind of do it. They say, hey, see that roll of carpet, roll it up, put it on your back, walk it up the staircase. And you're like, what?
Oh, okay,
sure. How do you do that?
Okay.
All right. You got to figure it out. But it's going back to the connector, you know, connecting to identity. One of the things that fathers do and men do is they tell you, hey, this is who you are. This is what you can do. This is how we do it. And guess what? I'm expecting that of you. And boys love that challenge. Young men love that challenge. It's in them to go like, okay, let me go figure that thing out. And I know that there were so many beautiful things that my dad gave me. And as a young man, as I got older and realized what I didn't get, you get kind of blown up. You know, you're sitting there and you're mad. And you're like, wow, no one taught me this. And he didn't teach me that. And you go through this thing of course, forgiveness and honoring. And so you get to a place of, wow, I really honor and appreciate these things that were handed down to me that helped me shape me as a man. I'm also noticing I'm missing some things. And I only notice that in the company of other great men, which is going back to what Ben was saying, is like, put yourself around great men, because you start to become who you hang around with. So I'm going to surround myself with a bunch of great men who are going to reflect back to me my deficiencies and say something about it. Mm-hmm. Like, hey, that way that you talk to your wife just now, like, you do that all the time. Mm. Like, we were just talking like, dude, my wife would knock me upside the head if I said, you know? Yeah. It's like, wait, what?
Yeah, I'd be in big trouble.
Yeah, so it's oh, okay, but because I'm still responsible. If I wasn't given it, like, even if I didn't know how, it's not my fault. This wasn't my fault I wasn't handed these tools, but I'm still responsible for figuring them out. Mm-hmm. So if there's some things that I'm missing, it, and guess what, everyone listening, if you're a man, even if you think you're doing really great, maybe you are doing really great, there are still some things you're probably missing, because we all are and we all are flawed.
Yeah.
When I'm around other great men, that they're going to show me through relationship and conversations and life together that there's some areas of my life that still need developing, and I'm going to be better for it, and I'm going to have things to give to them as well.
Yeah. So, you know, this particular episode is about answering the question why we need men, I think if that's a real question for you, you just need to look around. You just need to look around and look at the buildings, look at the highways, look at, you know, we were talking on a call recently with our Dragon Slayers, and Ron said, you know, every city was built by men.
Infrastructure.
You know, all the infrastructure that all the cars, all the, you know, you look around. This is why. You know, the fire department, the police department, you know, there's a courage, there's a strength, there's a willingness to lay your life down kind of thing that ends up propelling society. Obviously there is evil, right? But it's good men that will fight evil men. You know, it's not good women that are going to go fight evil men any more than, you know, I'm waking up Sherry and, oh, honey, there's a noise out in the living room. Go see what it is. Here, take the gun. You're like, I'm not sending Sherry out there.
Send me a text.
Yeah, yeah. I'll be right back. You stay in here.
Yeah. Just last week, three loud pops, pop, 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 outside the house. You know, we have the baby, and I was out, Bree was with the baby at night, and she goes, I think these were gunshots. In my head, I heard them too. I don't think they were gunshots, but I think these were gunshots. So then, you know, I go outside, and you know, my phone blows up, and she's like, why would you go outside? It's like, because my family's here. Yeah. If there's a threat outside, I'm going outside. And just as much as men would wade out into the scary depths of protecting their physically from gunshots potentially firing, which they weren't, but you know, potential
danger. Yeah.
What does that look like in a relationship, mm-hmm. in facing my wife with a scary truth or a need that I have, or addressing something that's our kid just told us something that it's like, oh my gosh, I don't know what to do with that. Like, am I going to press into that scary situation and bring my strengths? So just as much as men build the infrastructure of physical cities, they do the same thing in their families and in the worlds around them. They're building that with relationships. And, if you're wondering who needs, go find a wife who's happily married and go ask her potentially why do we need men around? And you'll probably get a really good answer, which is awesome.
Yeah, for sure. Well, we're going to land this one. Our next episode is just us answering a bunch of questions that men ask themselves and men have asked us. So we'll see you next time. Thanks for tuning in.
Thanks for listening. Never miss an episode of The Kylo Show by subscribing to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or watch us on the Loving on Purpose YouTube channel. Don't forget to submit your questions and testimonies to thekyloshow.com. The Kylo Show is produced by Ali Armading, co-produced by Ashley Beck and Anna Hill, and show promoter Christian Zamora. Don't forget, whole healthy families are going to save the world.